Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Last week, I mentioned that if you practice the ancient healing art and exercise meditation called Tai Chi, it would be beneficial. Today, I'll talk more about what it can do if you're an older person to help you. Also, most people don't use maple syrup, thinking it's not healthy. Not true. Maple syrup extract can give you a better brain, according to the University of Toronto. And then we want to look at blueberries. Why? Because they're more than just a superfruit. They could fight Alzheimer's disease. University of Cincinnati Health Center says so. And then yoga improves the quality of life with atrial fibrillation, which is an irregular heartbeat. That's important. So that's going to be discussed. And physical performance is enhanced with, once again, beet juice. Yeah, most people don't drink beet juice, but if you want strong, healthy blood, good. But if you want to be able to have more energy when you're exercising, even better. In fact, this past Saturday, I made a long trip in to do the state championship from my filming. And it was really fun because there were so many athletes in my age group who are terrific. I mean, really fast. So it's exciting to do that. And they had different drinks at the table that you could take during the race. And I had beet juice half, and coconut water half, and made all the difference in the world of being able to hold in there and win a gold. So I can tell you from personal experience, if you're going out jogging or power walking, if you're going to go for a bike ride or swimming, have yourself a glass of not much, 8 ounces, that's a small glass, like a cup, half of it with coconut water, half of it with beet juice, helping your blood, your detoxification, your liver, but more importantly, helping the mitochondria. Oh, and also that nitric oxide, it opens up your arteries, allowing blood to flow freer through there to get more blood into your brain. So that's a big one. That was done at the University of Washington. I'll tell you a story when I get to this part from a study at the University of Queensland, which is in Australia, about performing. When performers are in the zone, but athletes can be in the zone, creative people can be in the zone, meditators can be in the zone, praying can put you in the zone if you're really doing it as a way of going to a deeper place. According to this study, it's spiritual. What does that mean? We'll find out, and a lot more on health and healing. Plus, I'm going to go back into our archives today and show you some issues I discussed 11 years ago, and then look around and ask yourself, what has changed in the world today because of that? And then you'll think, wow, nothing's really changed. We're still doing all these bad things. Doesn't make a lot of sense. I'm not going to have a guest today because I want to talk about how science is now showing that when you complain negatively, you alter your brain negatively. And also, Fukushima, they knew. Greg Palast, they knew that it wouldn't hold up to a tsunami. Well, that changes the outcome. Also, the USDA is censoring any good science that challenges Monsanto. And anti-Asian sentiment is taking campuses by storm. Why is this rise in racism about foreign exchange students? These young people work. They're highly disciplined. Their parents help them and make sure that they study. They're not inherently smarter. There's no gene that allows them to be smarter. So instead of being angry at them, why don't we try to emulate some of their study habits? As climate change decimates crops, 500,000 people will die annually. according to the latest research I'm going to share with you from the University of Oxford. Also today, I'm going to get to the Mediterranean area. A lot of people say, Gary, I'd like to move to the Mediterranean area because it's really nice over there. And I'm thinking, are you aware they're out of water? The newest today from the Journal of Geophysical Research Atmosphere, Mediterranean may be driest for 900 years. The drought in the eastern Mediterranean is easily the worst in 500 years, perhaps nearly twice that long, and it's going to get worse. So for those of you who are thinking, maybe I should look in some wonderful places, Israel, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, Turkey, well, not so wise to move there. I'll explain why. And then I'm going to take on the corrupt alliance of psychiatric pharmaceutical industry, and there'll be a commentary in here from Chris Hedges, and also from our audio clip file. We have some good ones. This guy goes to the beach. It's just a good quality upscale beach in California. And he just stops people at random, all ages, all races. And he asks them a simple question. Who was Washington, D.C. named after? Right? And wait to hear the answers. And you're thinking, wow, these people are going to vote for president? It's just amazing. Also, today, a reality check. Hillary Clinton is not telling the truth about her super predator claims. That'll be deconstructed. I thought you would like to hear a brief two-minute statement by Maya Angelou. She was one of the first people I ever interviewed on my writer's forum, a radio show I had before a health and nutrition program for 5 years. She is going to talk about be a rainbow in somebody's cloud. Very profound. Also, have you actually looked at the pro-vaccine people? Have you actually looked? Doesn't take you long. You can Google it. Get a vaccine bottle. Look at the ingredients, then Google each ingredient. Have you actually looked at that? And you want to put that in your body? Now look under toxicology for each ingredient. These are all poisons, carcinogens, neurodisruptors. We say we don't have enough money to help many of the school children in America, and we don't have money to build them homes or build shelters for them, and there's 1.6 million are homeless children. But we have how much to give F-16s to our enemies? Why in the world would we be sending F-16 jets to Pakistan on our taxpayer dollar? Those are some of the issues we're going to be taking on. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who listen to my program live on Friday, by dialing 712-775-6850, that's 712-775-6850, you were joined, according to the research that I just received, 53,157 minutes. Wow. That's a whole lot of people coming over to listen live on Friday. And that'll be each Friday. Let's begin because we have a lot to share. Tai Chi, Tai, T-A-I, Chi, C-H-I. It's an ancient meditation. It's a very slow movement. You relax the body. You actually can use some yoga movements in Tai Chi. It's good for every muscle group in the body. It slows your breathing. It slows your heart rate. It relaxes you. I definitely recommend it. There are different ways it's taught. And at our many of the retreats, Mitchell Rabin has taught it. He's a master Tai Chi teacher, very capable, and people say afterwards, wow, that put me in a different place mentally. I just feel so rejuvenated. Good for you. According to Taipei Medical University in Taiwan, recent research compared the effects of Tai Chi to leg strengthening exercises and found that it reduced falls. It helped people. And keep in mind, falls are a leading cause of serious injury and death in older people. So this was in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. So do Tai Chi as a different type of exercise. From the University of Toronto, they did a study that was presented at the American Chemical Society meeting, and they took a look at maple syrup. And specifically, they wanted to know whether or not there were certain chemicals in maple syrup, phytochemicals, meaning the functional chemicals that actually do something. And they found that, yes, indeed, maple syrup can protect brain cells against the kind of damage found in Alzheimer's disease. One study presented by Dr. Donald Weaver from the Crombell Research Institute at the University of Toronto found that an extract of maple syrup can help prevent the misfolding and clumping of two types of proteins found in brain cells, the beta amyloid and the 2-peptide. And when cellular proteins fold improperly and clump together, they accumulate and form a plaque. And that's involved in the pathogenesis of aging and Alzheimer's and other brain diseases. The other research presented at the symposium showed that a pure maple syrup extract prevented the fibrillation, meaning tangling, of beta amyloid proteins and exerted neuroprotective effect in the microglial brain cells. Again, you don't want that happening. So when it doesn't happen, that's a good thing. And that was conducted at University of Rhode Island as well as Texas State University. So here you have two separate studies that show that maple, pure organic maple syrup, can make an enormous difference in helping you prevent damage to your brain. Now, yes, there are other things that can do that as well. Green tea, resveratrol found in grapes or grape skin or grape seed, grape powders, berries, curcumin, pomegranates, they're all terrific in strengthening your brain and preventing Alzheimer's disease. So that's good. So get your maple syrup in there as well. Blueberries, a superfood beyond a superfood. This is from University of Cincinnati Health Center. The blueberry is a powerful food for lowering the risk of heart disease and cancer. That we know, but we did not know that it's another weapon in the war against Alzheimer's disease. The newest research presented shows that it does just that. It's the phytonutrients in there, the polyphenols in there. Quote from the study, and this was at the American Chemical Society's national meeting, our new findings corroborate those of previous studies and preliminary human studies, adding further support to the notion that blueberries can have a real benefit in improving memory and cognitive function. And that's terrific. So when you consider how many millions of Americans suffer from Alzheimer's, officially over 5 million, how many unofficially have Alzheimer's that's not been officially diagnosed yet? Well, probably around 10 million. How many are likely to have dementia and Alzheimer's in the next 10 years? Probably close to 50 million. So we're running into a pandemic on this, and we're not doing a thing to prevent it. Having more berries every day can make a difference, getting rid of the foods that cause inflammation. And from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, published in the European Journal of Cardiovascular Nursing, yoga improves quality of life in patients with atrial fibrillation. That's good. So if you have AFib, do yoga. And University of Washington, quote, next time you're making your morning Nutribullet with fruit and veggies, adding some beetroot may well help to enhance your day's physical performance. Research group at the University of Washington School of Sports Science, Exercise and Health, Dr. Peter Peelings, examine the influence of beetroot, which is actually beets, supplements, have on physiological and performance outcomes in elite kayakers. And it made a big difference. So have your beet juice for your exercise. And finally, University of Queensland. Prima ballerinas, Anna Pavlova and Margaret Fontaine reported entering altered states of consciousness and having spiritual experiences during performance. Researcher says, Master of Arts studying religion graduate Linda Flowers said her research aimed to gain an in-depth understanding of peak performance lip experiences and in the meaning people made of them. Getting a greater understanding is increasingly important with the current trend of applying knowledge gained about peak performance, particularly in sports and other high-performance areas such as business, education, medicine, military. So what they're saying here is this, that there's a point where you're doing something, where you have mastered it, where you fold in all extraneous information, meaning there's nothing that you're focused on except just being so completely mindful in that moment that you freed yourself from all external stimuli. And that is where you can have remarkable spiritual experiences. I can confirm that because there was a time in my life where I had trained so hard that physically I could not train any harder. I was starting with several people who were all training together for some World Games National Championships. And knowing the competition was so severe that we would have to meet at 4 o'clock in the morning in the park, train for 3 hours in the park, hard running, then doing every other kind of running up and down 25 flights of stairs, 25 times without stopping, 2 hours on a VersaClimber, doing that 6 days a week, and it takes a toll on you. And then you still realize, gee whiz, I can only gain a second or two. And in fact, when you go into some of the national races, at least back then, they would give you your standing in the race based upon the best time you'd ever done, and that you were trying to get a couple seconds on. In that race, for the first time I'd ever experienced it, at the 10K mark, I told people I was running with, I'm not going to do this. And they thought I was dropping out of the race. And they didn't realize. They were all saying, oh, it's so hot, it's humid, it's a hilly course. Why do they do these races in the middle of August when it's 98 degrees? And I simply decided to try something I'd never done, go into the zone. And I went into the zone and I started a kick. You generally save the kick to the end of a race when you got 100 feet to go. I gave my kick 18 miles to go. And I didn't hear anything or see anything except I was just in this very calm, wonderful place where I wasn't limited by what my muscles have been told they could or could not do. And when you free yourself from what you're told, believe you can't do, suddenly you're free to do what you choose to do. And it was only at the very end that I heard someone say, when I passed this group, this was the national team members, these were the fastest guys in America in this competition, I heard them say, we got to break and go for it. So that's all I heard. And at the end, there you break that barrier, and I set a new American record, and I was the first of all these Americans, 137 champions, and that record stands today. And not a single person came over after and says, how in the hell did you do that? You were seeded 67th. And indeed, at the 10K mark, they read off my seed, and I was 67. So had I lived by the laws of normal conditional behavior, I would not have allowed my muscles to go faster because I wouldn't believe it was possible based upon how I had not gone faster no matter how much more training, I'd reach my peak. So what this means is that when you go into a zone, you're no longer limited by the epigenetic conditioning. You're free to go into a special place. And I believe that in all areas of life, that people are able to go into that zone. I believe the shamans go into that zone. I believe that the healers go into that zone, real healers. I believe that great performers go into that zone. I believe that millions of people go into that zone and therefore no longer limited. So just something to share. So we have two realities. The reality that we're told you can't go any faster, you can't do this, you can't do that, and it's true as long as you're being guided by your conditioned self, because your cells are going to pay attention to what you tell them. But when you reach that spiritual level where your mind is not telling you from its conditioned place but from an eternal place, then you can do all kinds of things. And I went on that year, by the way, to do 47 races. And I was coming from behind and doing the same thing in all those races. That's the year I was voted Metropolitan Athletic Outstanding Track and Field Master Athlete of the Year, and I did it for 3 years, was nominated for 14. So I'm just saying for all of you, no matter what you think you can't do, you are right. You can't do it. But then allow yourself to go into a spiritual place where you can do it. This morning I put up a video on my website of a one-legged weightlifter doing clean and jerks, where you pick the weight up off the ground and put it in the air, one leg. I also put a man who had been hurt in combat in Afghanistan and came back to do things you could not imagine, but he had a home video to show you from beginning to end, all the time he fell down, all the time. He's now in that zone. Something else I thought about. We put a lot of energy into supporting people who become famous in different fields, like singers, performers. But you know who we don't put a lot of energy into, and sometimes not at all? Musicians. The people who, of course, there are always going to be some people who will know, you know, one of the percussionists or the second violin. But I believe that these are people that are underappreciated and who spend their entire life continuing to master. And I believe a lot of them should have an advantage because of the gift they give us in return for the sacrifice they make. What if we had a lottery just for musicians? We could start with musicians and then expand it from there to incorporate other artists. And that lottery, which would be tens of millions of dollars to hundreds of millions of dollars, we see what will go exclusively to pay for the education, the living expenses, and to give a living wage to performers so they do not have to try to master their craft at the same time, do waitressing or whatever they have to do to earn an income. I believe that until you realize how much they sacrifice, how hard they work, the same is true for so many people, the dancers, the ballerinas, all the people. We only hear about the most famous ones, and we don't know anything about all the rest. I believe the same is true for medicine. I believe we should take all the profit out of medicine. But to do that, we should also honor those men and women who go into a noble field with the intent of helping patients overcome illness or prevent it, and pay for their entire education and give them a living wage. In return, they give back by not charging for their care to the patients. Could you imagine if a doctor was unencumbered by debt? Could you imagine if a medical system had community-based medicine that was for free? Could you imagine that what that would mean for all the people who do not get quality care today, or all the doctors who are besieged by malpractice fears, over-diagnosing, over-treating, and living by a medical paradigm that has nothing in relationship to true medical practice. You can't have it both ways, though. You can't say we don't want to interfere with Big Pharma's control over medicine and then complain when we find out how many drugs are killing people. I believe that we're evolved enough to take that step to support those individuals who are going to give their entire life to enhancing ours. I believe it's a spiritual step that we have to take. And when you realize how committed the performer is in all areas of performance, I'm just starting with one, music, and give them a quality of life so each day they wake up and they can focus upon continuing the mastery and being in that zone. And we're there to benefit from it. Because if you've ever sat in a room and listened to a musician share that energy, it creates remarkable exchange. Just some thoughts. We're going to take a break and come back. We have a lot more to share and a lot of interesting stuff you're going to hear. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Oh, and by the way, for those people in the audience, including some of the people who believe in the libertarian movement that we should be selfish and not selfless, and that if someone can't make it, it's their fault, and if they do make it, they should exploit it as much as they can, you probably have been influenced by Ayn Rand. I knew Ayn Rand, didn't like Ayn Rand, and I knew her lover. He was a nice guy, but she was something else. And Dr. Bruce Levine on Alternet posted a little article about Ayn Rand, and I just thought, this is from Al Gore, quote, "Ayn Rand's philosophy is nearly perfect in its immorality, which makes the size of her audience all the more ominous and symptomatic as we enter a curious new phase in our society. To justify and extol human greed and egotism is, in my mind, not only immoral, but evil." And he said that back in 1961. Only rarely in U.S. history do writers transform us to become a more caring or less caring nation. Who comes to mind? In the 1850s, it was Harriet Beecher Stowe. And she was a strong force in making the United States a more humane nation, one that would abolish slavery of African Americans. A century later, Ayn Rand, who lived till 1982, I believe, helped make the United States into one of the most uncaring nations in the industrialized world, a neo-Dickinsonian society where health care is only for those who can afford it and where young people are coerced into huge student loan debt that cannot be discharged in bankruptcy. And Ayn Rand's personal life was consistent with her philosophy of not caring about anybody but herself. She was an ardent two-pack-a-day smoker, and when questioned about the dangers of smoking, she loved to light up with a defiant flourish and then scold her questioners on their so-called unscientific and irrational nature of the statistical evidence. After an x-ray showed that she had lung cancer, she quit smoking and had surgery for her cancer. Collective members explained to her that many people still smoke because they respected her and her assessment of the evidence, and that since she no longer smoked, she ought to tell them. They told her that she needn't mention her lung cancer, that she should simply say that she had reconsidered her evidence. She refused. most of the people growing up who are baby boomers like myself, you probably read The Fountainhead or Atlas Shrugged. There wasn't much difference between the comic books and Rand's novels in terms of the simplisticness of her heroes. What was different was, unlike Superman or Batman, Rand made selfishness heroic, and she made caring for others weakness. Rand said capitalism and altruism are incompatible. The choice is clear-cut. Either a new morality of rational self-interest, that's what we have today, that's what many of the Tea Party people have, with its consequences of freedom, justice, progress, and man's happiness on earth, or the primordial morality of altruism, with its consequences of slavery, brute force, stagnant terror, and sacrificial furnaces. For many young people hearing that it is moral to care only about oneself, that can be intoxicating. In fact, some people, especially our younger generation, many, not all, but many, are addicted to this idea of themselves. I've known several people professionally and socially whose lives have been changed by those close to them who became infatuated with Ayn Rand. A common theme is something like this. Well, my ex-husband wasn't a bad guy until he started reading Ayn Rand. Then he became a completely selfless, selfish jerk who destroyed our family, and our children no longer even talk to him. Rand offered a narcotic of confused people, mainly younger people, complete with certainty and a relief from their anxiety. Rand believed that an objective reality existed and that she knew exactly what that objective reality was. It included skyscrapers and industries and railroads and ideas, at least her own. And Rand's objective reality did not include anxiety or sadness, nor did it include humor. She was humorless. Rand assured her collective that objective reality did not include Beethoven, Rembrandt, or Shakespeare realities. They were too gloomy and too tragic. Rand preferred Mickey Spillane. So when we no longer can think of what would be good for others and how others' benefit could also enhance ourselves, then you know that maybe it's time for an inner dialogue with your spiritual self. Let's see something about Americans today, and this is not an isolated situation. This is common. And this is an interview done on a beach with random people. You can see he didn't select people based upon their age or race or anything else. These are just the people who are coming by. So he just stopped them. And he asked them a simple question. Who is Washington, D.C., our capital, named after? Here's their responses.
Who is our nation's capital named after?
Oh, my God. Okay. See, why are you going to ask me something? Can I Google it?
Nope. Gotta. It should be in your memory.
No,
nation's capital, named after who?
Okay, who's the name? What's our name? Why are you leaving me? You're supposed to be helping me.
Over you, just you.
Oh, my God. Okay, the nation's capital. The nation's capital. Okay, the United. Okay, you know what I'm saying?
Who is the nation's capital named after?
I don't know. I give up. I plead the fifth.
Who is our nation's capital named after?
Our nation's capital?
Who is it named after?
I have no idea.
You have to tell us.
The capital of America. It's named after a certain person.
I have no idea.
I have no idea.
George Washington?
Are you sure?
No, I don't really care.
It doesn't matter about these things, right?
Right.
So you're not really sure who it's named after?
No.
No.
Google it.
You can Google it. Okay. You do that. I'm going to have to go with, I don't know.
George Washington.
Okay. We got to talk to the millennials. They've lost their minds. They won't know.
They're not going to have a clue.
No, thank you. I like that shirt.
Thank you.
You getting the shirt in there? Our nation's capital is named after who?
I don't know. Man, I just woke up.
You just
what
woke up.
What is this for, anyways?
Where'd you get that shirt at?
I don't remember.
What does the shirt stand for?
I love Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh. Who was that city named after?
Washington.
There we go. Who?
Washington.
Which, who Washington?
Washington, Washington.
First name. It's his first name.
Man, I'm having a blank right now.
Anything?
It's not coming to me right now.
All right. Well, that's a nice shirt.
Thank you. I'm just out of it.
Okay. Sorry about that. Quick question for you.
Okay.
Our nation's capital is named after who?
Our nation's capital is Washington, D.C. And I don't know who it's named after.
A president. Some president. I don't know. Is it you?
You're on the right track.
George Washington.
Okay, good for you. We're just checking.
Okay.
All right.
Start past.
Yeah. Our nation's capital is named after who?
Oh God, this is Jay Leno thing.
I'll look to him for help.
Answer the question.
Yep.
Lincoln.
Lincoln, D.C.
Washington.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Who is our nation's capital named after?
We're Italians.
No.
Oh, you're Italians. Oh, this will be even better. The capital of America
is
the
named,
city.
Yeah, is after named George Washington.
You're right, it is. You guys are on vacation from Italy?
Yeah.
That is awesome. We're just talking to stupid Americans. Many of them don't know who our nation's capital is named after.
How is that possible?
Because they're just lost their minds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think Americans are overwhelmingly dumber than Italians?
Yes.
Probably.
You don't. Sometimes. You won't offend me at all.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. In many cases, probably.
And a lot fatter too.
Probably. Yes.
Okay. Have a good.
I saw a lot of videos like this one.
Oh yeah, making fun of Americans is a pastime.
So what you didn't see is how many more people he asked who were clueless. It seems like we have a whole lot of people in America who are disconnected from history, culture, ethics, morality, and only know what is popular. Your thoughts on that? What has happened in America? This is a talk back segment. We'll go to your calls, 888-874-4888. And how are these people who are answering this way with no clue, how are they supposed to know the truth about whether or not a vaccine is safe or effective, whether medication is right? If they have children, and the school teacher said Johnny has ADHD and has to have a Ritalin, how are they supposed to know if that's true or not? How are they supposed to know if a presidential candidate is telling the truth? Let me give an example. Every single candidate, including Bernie Sanders, has ties to the military-industrial spy complex. This is from Bloomberg, from Roxana Tiron. Republicans' security advisor tied to $40 billion in contracts. Quotes, national security advisors to the Republican presidential candidates have ties to defense, homeland security, and energy companies that have received at least $40 billion in federal contracts. Five of former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney's 41 national security and foreign policy advisors have links to companies that last year alone received $7.9 billion in federal contracts. Well, okay. You look at almost any of these people who are advising them, and the people who are advising them are tied into making sure their advice brings the money back to their industry or their companies. How would someone know that if they're not going to be self-educated? Your thoughts, 888-874-4888. Now, I thought you'd like to hear something more in the inspirational sense. This is Maya Angelou talking about Be a Rainbow in Somebody's Cloud.
It's an African-American song, 19th century, which is so great. It says, when it looked like the sun wasn't gonna shine anymore, God put a rainbow in the clouds. Imagine. And I've had so many rainbows in my clouds. I had a lot of clouds. But I have had so many rainbows. And one of the things I do when I step up on a stage, when I stand up to translate, when I go to teach my classes, when I go to direct a movie, I bring everyone who has ever been kind to me with me. Black, white, Asian, Spanish-speaking, Native American, gay, straight, everybody. I say, come with me. I'm going on the stage. Come with me. I need you now. Long dead. You see? So I don't ever feel I have no help. I've had rainbows in my clouds. And the thing to do, it seems to me, is to prepare yourself so that you can be a rainbow in somebody else's cloud. Somebody who may not look like you, may not call God the same name you call God, if they call God at all. You see? I may not eat the same dishes prepared the way you do, may not dance your dances or speak your language. But be a blessing to somebody. That's what I think.
Maya Angelou, beautiful soul. This is from our going back and look to see what has changed. This is 10 years old. I presented this back on December 28, 2006. Paxil can more than triple major cardiac birth defects. And this was published from a peer-reviewed journal. And yet the FDA allows it to be used. Cardiologists use it. Medical doctors use it. And they're making billions of dollars a year off this drug, Paxil. I believe that no one should be using Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Effexor, any of these selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting drugs. They are all dangerous. But 10 years, it's still on the market. This from 10 years ago, processed meat ups pancreas cancer risk. Quote, eating a lot of red meat, and particularly processed meat, increases the risk of pancreatic cancer. Findings in a large multi-ethnic study. The results hint that carcinogenic substances used in meat processing rather than the fat or cholesterol content is responsible for the association. And this was presented to the American Association for Cancer Research. Okay. So what has happened? We've increased the amount of consumption of red meat. Artificial sweetener causes cancer in lab rats, and yet it's approved for humans. And this was, again, in a peer-reviewed journal. I presented it. This was in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives. We've increased the amount of artificial sweeteners. Hairdressers at risk of respiratory disease. Quote from Reuters. Bleaching agents used in hair salons put hairstylists at risk of asthma and inflammation of the eyes, nose, and throat. Researchers published in the peer-reviewed journal Chest. Quote, in the last years, I've seen several cases of occupational asthma in hairdressers. And it goes on. Do you see any form of air purification device in hair salons? No. So once again, nothing done that could make a difference. Antibiotic regimen does not cut heart disease risks. From G. Memory Reuters, long-term antibiotic treatment, which is bad, designed to fight a common but stubborn bacterial infection, does not reduce the risk of heart attacks, according to this study. And so, have we reduced the use of antibiotics to cut heart disease risk? No, we have not. We've increased them. Painkillers can cause fatal stomach bleeding. Approximately one-third of all hospitalizations and deaths related to gastrointestinal bleeding can be attributed to the use of aspirin or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agents, painkillers like ibuprofen. We've increased the risk. And that was on August 24th, 2005. Mammograms cause breast cancer and other cancers. In fact, you probably didn't know, breast cancer is the leading cause of death among American women between the ages of 44 and 55. And this research shows that the most common method of early detection is mammograms. Mammogram is an X-ray picture of your breast that can reveal tumor growth otherwise undetectable in a physical exam. Like all X-rays, mammograms uses doses of ionizing radiation to create this image. Radiologists then analyze the image for any abnormal growth. Despite continuous improvements and innovations, mammograms has garnered a sizable opposition in the medical community because of an error rate that is still high in the amount of harmful radiation. Then it goes on to say that it's really not effective and that it causes cancer. Those are some old pieces of information that are still relevant today. Oh, by the way, honey extract may ease heat stress of cyclists. This is in the Journal of Food Science, and that's good information. And walnuts lower cholesterol more than fish. This is a good study. The American Journal of Clinical Nutrition found that incorporating approximately 1.5 ounces, that's a small amount, that's a little over a tablespoon of walnuts, or be about 2.5 tablespoons, I should say, of walnuts each day, can make a big difference and lower the bad cholesterol in your body. So better than fish. So eat your walnuts, lower your cholesterol. And that's the latest there. And if you complain, if you're a negative complainer, this is the latest on this. Quote, listening to someone complain, even if it's yourself, has never done anyone any good. Some people say that it may act as a catharsis, a way to let go of negative emotions and experiences, maybe letting all this out once in a while makes you feel good. But taking a closer look at what complaining actually does to the brain gives us even more cause to strive for a positive frame of mind and cut out the complaining. What happens is the brain is a very complex physical organ that somehow works in tandem with consciousness to create the personality of a human being, always learning, always recreating and regenerating itself. It is both the product of reality and the creative reality, and science is finally beginning to understand how the brain actually creates reality. And what they found here is that, quote, synapses that fire together wire together. In essence, the neuroplasticity, the science of how the brain rewires itself based upon whatever it is repetitively exposed to. So if you are around a negative person that complains, then you're going to be rewiring your brain to that, and that is dangerous because it really adversely affects your brain, and then it affects your personality from the brain. So just understand, you may learn to tolerate negative people, whiners, complainers, blamers, but your brain is adversely affected because of them. Let's say hello to Ronald from Long Island. Ronald, your turn on TalkBack.
Good afternoon. In regard to your question, I feel it's certainly a failure of education. I understand that although the United States spends far more per person per student than any other country in the world, its ranking is approximately number 30 from the top as far compared with other countries, primarily in Europe, that spend far less per person. I also think it would be a good idea if they brought back some books and had specific teaching of American history, for example, maybe turn off some of the computers more of the time.
Let's say that we brought back the books, Ronald. What about the books that have been sanitizing history and not telling the truth about Columbus, about the so-called discovery of the West, or of our explorations around the world? What about even today, virtually everything written officially about Libya is a lie? Tomorrow night's Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 o'clock, I will do a full hour showing you what Libya was prior to the invasion, why they needed to take it out and kill Gaddafi. None of that would be in any textbook today, or even an article. It wouldn't even be referenced by the New York Times. So giving textbooks is important, but having independent reviews so that you get a Howard Zinn textbook, which is a real history of the United States and not the manufactured one. But your point is well taken. And also, why should we coddle so many young people today where the only things of interest is how they feel, instead of offering some discipline so that they have to do homework, they have to be engaged in the issues that are important to them, including learning how to cook and garden and be self-sufficient in different areas in school, in every year of school, and then not let them get an award for just showing up. If you make everything that they do without effort, then where's the motivation to ever grow? Important point you bring up, Ronald. Thank you. David from Brooklyn, your turn. Hi, David.
For being here for all the people, Gary, I just admire you so much. I want to say that what we call education, generally, is not education. It is training. It's, you know, I was a military officer one time, and we got training. So that is essentially what they do in school. Whether you're talking about the primary, secondary, or tertiary level, it is mostly training to fit in with the status quo. So they want to train people to do what is expected of them and not educate them, which would empower them. If you are educated, you're empowered. And I don't believe that those in power want the people to be powerful enough and to make any changes that are in favor of what is good for the masses of people. I think this is a serious problem of what do we call education. Most of it, to a large extent, is training.
Good point, David. I would share this. I don't believe that any of the people in power, as you mentioned, are trying to dumb down people. I believe that the consequences of making profit off children's education as their primary goal then negates the idea that you're creating critical thinkers. And so I think that they're indifferent to that. When a person becomes that powerful that they can control the curriculum, the textbooks, how things are taught, then they're looking at only the gains in monetary sense for them, not the consequences of a critical thinking population that could judge things on more objective merits. Your point is well taken, David. Thank you for sharing. Harry from New Jersey. Your turn, Harry. Hi, Harry. You're on the air. Turn off your radio. Listen live over the telephone.
Yeah, hi. My comment is when those random passerbys were interviewed about Washington, I got very sad. I'm very sad about our country at the present time. I see big corporations and the government in collusion. I see teachers being fired, schools being closed. I see the poor and the middle class. I see it's harder and harder for them even to put food on the table. I see our involvement in the Middle East, which is reprehensible. I see the drone problem as it's a type of operation that an emperor or a king would do, go cross borders into sovereign nations and kill at whim. I feel sad about a president killing American civilians. This country is so different from when I grew up. I'm 64, and I'm just sad and depressed about the problems this country has. And the people who are answering questions about Washington, they don't seem to have a clue. I mean, they're concerned with, in my opinion, is for the haircuts and the clothes and their phones. And I'm just wondering.
Harry, you've made several points, but I think one of the more important points you made is that you're sad because these people don't seem to be connected. And that's two ways of looking at it. One is people engage in willful ignorance, and therefore we have a responsibility to share a different point of view with them to see if they're connected to it. And also, when you say that they're connected to their haircuts and their clothes, the things that are superficial, then what is the central meaning of their lives? And I believe that we should be able to encourage people to keep focus on what is important, the central meaning of their life is. Harry, thank you. I have time for just two quick more. Robert from New Jersey. Robert, your turn. No, Robert's gone. Gino from the Bronx. Gino?
Good day, Gary.
Hi.
Hello? Gary, just to add to your comment on Ayn Rand, as you remember, she's one of these people that Alan Greenspan was inspired by. He was inspired by her. And when she got, excuse me, sick, a person who's saying, pull yourself up by your bootstraps if you can't make it, basically just suffer. She ended up taking Social Security, and the medical bills were paid by the taxpayers. The other thing is, you know, when she was on a, she came here at 21. Her real name was Alyssa Rosenbaum. And when she came here from Russia, she changed her name to Ayn Rand. And then she was working, of all ironic things, she was working as an extra with another would-be actor on Cecil B. DeMille, The King of Kings. And she married the father to avoid deportation because her visa ran out. At her funeral, there was 800 people showed up, including Alan Greenspan, and they had a big dollar sign next to the coffin. So I think it says something that, you know, she's a person like who will say one thing but does another, and definitely the seeds of destruction that have been happening with the bankers, it's definitely a large part planted by her.
She was a motivating factor, Gino. My final thought is this. They talk about hypocrisy. You just mentioned hypocrisy, Gino. She used Medicare. That is correct. And she took her Social Security. She lived one way and spoke another. Think of all the people who are criticizing Bernie Sanders as one example of socialism, and yet, what about corporate socialism? What about the hundreds of billions of dollars every year that they get in a form of socialism where we, the taxpayers, subsidize them? What about the socialism that allowed over $6 trillion to be given interest-free to all these major Ayn Randist, neoliberal globalist on their own, living in the true laissez-faire marketplace? They would have all gone bankrupt. All of them. Every major bank. All of them bankrupt. And yet, they criticize what they themselves exploit. Thank you, Harry, David, Ronald, and Gino, for your input. I want to thank everyone for listening. And just remember, when you see a rise in racism to international students who are coming from countries where they're doing good work, they're not disrupting our society, why don't we take a look at what they went through, what discipline they had, what focus they had in their own home, in their communities, and maybe learn a lesson from that instead of just being angry at them, which is never constructive. I'm Gary Noll. Have a nice day, everyone.